Greetings and welcome to episode 28, More AI. I don't know what we're calling it, but we're just good. That's the world we live in now. More AI. I can assure you that as I record this, that I am David Lankus, the human one, not the AI clone who would be better spoken and probably better looking. I'm the Bowden Professor of Librarianship at the University of Texas at Austin, and I'm here with two other human beings. Beth Patan, Assistant Professor at Syracuse University's School of Information Studies, and Mike Eisenberg, Founding Dean and Faculty Emeritus of the University of Washington's iSchool. We like to shake things up for the better, delving into issues and ideas, focusing on life in our information world. The podcast is aimed at anyone interested in information about and the library field, with an emphasis on the role and opportunities for libraries and information people to make things better. Thank you for listening to Libraries Lead. Please keep spreading the word and send feedback to info@librarieslead.org on social media. And please review us on your favorite podcast app. And we are very grateful for our academic sponsors, the University of Texas at Austin and the University of iSchool. Hi, Beth. Hi, Mike. Beth, please remind us of why we are here.
Sure. We started this podcast because we like to shake things up for the better. And we like bouncing ideas off of each other as we delve into the issues and ideas focusing on our life in the information world, what's going on and what the future might hold. The podcast is aimed at anyone interested in information and the library field, with an emphasis on the roles and opportunities for libraries and information people to make the world better. We are very pleased that we have many listeners, and I hope that we are someone's first number one podcast on their Spotify Wrapped. It's not my sister, because she had a different podcast as her number one, but we appreciate everybody who's our top listener. Thanks, y'all. Libraries Lead is a monthly podcast. Each episode runs approximately 1 hour and now includes 4 segments. A What's Up from each of us, AI Watch, where we react to AI-relevant developments, technologies, and articles. 3, a deeper dive into a main topic. And finally, Awesome Library Thingies, where we highlight some of the amazing things going on across the globe and in the library world. However, in this episode, we're going to combine AI Watch and the main topic, since AI is our main topic. So let's get right to it. Dave, what's up with you?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about what's up with me what we've been playing with today. But what's up with me is I've had some really interesting, cool library experiences in the past couple of weeks that are worth sharing. The first was I went down, Library Journal has a director's summit. And it was in Houston. So I came down, they gave me an opportunity to speak there. And it's a great event. Library directors come in from around the country and they just sort of have this really honest conversation about like what it's like to be a director and how do we deal with things. And what was interesting is they also did, imagine, a segment on book challenges. And one of the things that really struck me, and the director of the Virginia Library Association, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on her name, talked about how they were, some of how they were responding to this. And what they were doing is showing up at boards and, you know, council meetings with a bill that basically said, okay, all of these book challenges that go in, create cost. We'd like to think that they're not, but it takes time of the director. It takes time of high level staff. They have to review things. They have to go through it over and over again. And so she showed up and said, so we figured that for this latest book challenge, that's an $8,000 charge we would like to get back from the people who put it in. And then, you know, if we look at all the book challenges, it comes up to a couple of $100,000. And I mean, while it's cute, it really was this sort of very pragmatic discussion about, look, by double guessing professionals, because that was another comment, which was why are we looking at these challenges when we already went through a professional level analysis to get them into the collection? But it was just this interesting tag. So, I kind of feel like now we're at the end of the beginning, right? So the beginning of all the book challenges and all the pushes. And at the very beginning, it was wide-eyed and what the hell and who's us and what's going on. And I feel like now we're the library community is really reaching its stride in terms of having now developed stronger arguments, more nuanced arguments, bringing them together. So that was really cool. And then I drove up to Dallas, where they have something called Tall Texans, which is a mentoring program. So they bring great librarians mid-career into a Jesuit retreat center. I was having flashbacks with lots of crucifixes on the wall. but yeah, and walk them through leadership, talking about, you know, how they do innovation and leadership and new models of planning and things like that. And it was just this great. We're all in the middle of nowhere eating okay food, but spending 8 hours together. And I just want to give a shout out to the Texas Library Association and EBSCO and Hocker who fund that effort, and it's just fabulous. So I had my nice little retreat to talk amongst the community to recharge batteries, and it was really great. Really great. How about you, Mike? Because we never put Beth second or first.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. You just had a flashback for me, Dave. Back a number of years ago, I was at a Jesuit retreat place in Annapolis, Maryland, for a school library research retreat, and I was in a little room with one, twin size bed with a cross above me and whatever, and it was an interesting evening of sleep for me. Anyway, I wanted to talk a little about that. Dave, when you brought up this topic and the title for today's podcast, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid I can do that, Dave, and referred to 2001, A Space Odyssey, it brought back a wave of memories for me because I was a freshman in college in 1968. And I remember my watching that movie vividly, the Hellman Theater across the street from the campus at Albany. I was 18 years old. I was in love. I had met this woman, Carol Guptill, who is my wife today. We would do movie and a pizza quite often. And the Hellman was a really upscale theater, plush seats and carpet that was really good and a great sound system for 1968. And we went in, and that opening scene in 2001 just blew me away. And it's, I think, affected my whole life in a lot of ways because of the fascination with technology and its relation to human beings. And in particular, this whole thing about intelligent computer technology, and are they going to, take over? Well, we've been talking about that now for, some 55 years. So humans so far are on top. So, but anyway, that was my what's up, thinking about that and remembering those things. And I don't feel old. It made me feel young, actually, to remember all that stuff and that it was totally relevant. Just one last thing. I once had, a few years ago, had my kids and grandkids sit down and watch that movie with us. First of all, it was on a regular TV, but it's a very slow movie. And today's young people with attention spans, that it just took way too long, but it was great for me and Carol. So
And they weren't
that's
stoned when they were watching it, so that also probably.
Shh,
Oh, sorry.
It was 68. Come on.
68.
I mean,
I know. 18. Beth, what's up with you, kid?
it was a different time. So I've spent my fair share of time in both Jesuit and Benedictine educational institutions. So that was a surprise that represented in all of our stories. So I have three kind of updates that are all really small. So I mentioned to y'all last time that I had a whole bunch of talks at different universities, and so those are wrapping up. I have my final talk on Thursday in Ann Arbor, so I'll be heading there tomorrow. And it's just been so great to get to share my work. And, questions that I'm getting from the audience is like, how do we support you do this work better? And so it's been, continues to be really well received. And it's just been a fantastic experience getting it out there more. So the second thing, it was, of course, Thanksgiving while we were on break. And I came down to Alabama to spend it with my family. And Brian and I decided that we were going to fry a turkey for the very first time. And we were having Thanksgiving at my mom's house. So I told my stepdad we were going to fry it over there. And he was like, great. Now I have to worry about my home instead of yours. And but I'm happy to report that we fried the turkey. We did not get into any arguments and we did not set anything on fire. And the turkey was delicious. So that was great. And then finally, I went to see the Beyonce Renaissance movie this weekend, and I've already seen the Taylor Swift Eras Tour movie, and it was just A really powerful summer, also adding in the Barbie movie of like women making amazing just like business decisions and financial decisions, and just kind of seeing the control and hard work that those ladies put into their craft. And the Taylor Swift movie was really just you're at her concert, but the Beyonce movie kind of showed you behind the scenes, and there were so many cool informational pieces, like her stage, how many different pieces it had, and it was so complicated. She had to have three. So if she was performing in LA, the stages in Houston were getting built, and the next place out. And so just thinking about the logistics of that kind of scene was just, and kind of getting to see the background was super cool. So that's what I've been up to. Oh, and one more thing, college football playoffs. Super excited that the Huskies are 13-0. I'm looking, hopefully I'm gonna make it down to New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl and watch them beat Dave's Longhorns. So
Yeah, sorry to disappoint you.
that's what's up with me. Go Huskies.
Go Huskies, go Dogs. Sorry, Dave.
Hook 'em, that's all good.
But UT is not the evil empire, Beth,
No.
so we can
No. No.
it's okay. All
Definitely
right.
not.
Well, we're not going to take a break. We're going to jump right into our main topic, which is, I'm afraid I can do that, Dave, which is a takeoff from the Stanley Kubrick 1968 film, 2001, in which the ship's intelligent computer, HAL 9000, starts to take over. And at one point says to the crewman, Dave, I'm sorry, Dave, I'm afraid I can't do that. Meaning he can't let Dave back into the spacecraft so that Dave can try to dismantle HAL, who is a threat to his life. This film, made 55 years ago, raises some of the very same questions and issues we're facing today. So, Dave, our Dave Lankus, tell us
Hello.
about the various capabilities and tools of the new AI and how they might just be capable of doing just about everything. To me, it's exciting, but very scary. Maybe you could start by explaining about this new app you've been working with, Po, that can be used to create, customize, and create personal answer bots. That is AI chat services based on one's own content. You use this to create your own virtual Dave or virtual Dave and Live Leader, a chat bot based on this podcast and the content from the. How is this different from ChatGPT? How does it all work? What did you do? And how does it represent things in terms of the various developments in AI? And I'm going to shut up in just a sec, we'll turn it over to Beth to take Live Leader for a spin with some of the queries and topics that we've might have covered in the past episodes. And Beth, as you do this, please walk us through what you're inputting so that our audience and our listeners can find out what's going on. So, Dave, you first, if that's not enough.
Okay, so first, let's remember that as of Thanksgiving of this year, ChatGPT turns 1 year old. That all and while AI has been around, we've had that conversation. Generative AI really hit the popular world and became really accessible to the rest of us 1 year ago. And since
Wow.
then, we've seen ChatGPT go crazy. We've seen a ton of image generation. We've seen all of these tools. There's an AI bot where you can pretend that they're someone from history and talk to Jefferson and use it in a classroom, these kinds of things. Lots of places that will generate music for you. These are just things that are happening. I just want to give a perspective. In fact, one of the new tools, one of the big professional video editing tools out there is something called Adobe Premiere. And it's complicated. It's like, how does this go here and how do I cut? Now, what you can do is you can drop a video you've taken on your phone or whatever into it. Tell it to make a transcript of which will do the recognize the audio of your video and turn it into text. Then you can go and it will identify any gaps or ums in the text. And then you can just edit the text and it will automatically cut up the video to match.
Wow.
We're getting to the point where it's, and I was gave a presentation last week. And I used PowerPoint to do it. And I just typed in the title, which was Inspiring Joy in the Library Ecosystem. And PowerPoint popped up and goes, hey, how about this design? And it was like, Yes, it was a book, but it had these floating icons around it. It was really pretty, and all I had to do was click, and suddenly I had a pretty image, right? It's almost now hard not to run into AI when you're generating tools and such. But in doing all this stuff and playing with all this stuff, there's always been in the back of my head, which is, but what if it gave it me? What if I could put it my kind of stuff, whatever I wanted to look at, and shape it to what I wanted to do? And so I ran across, just through watching different news feeds, whatever, a site called Poe, Poe.com. And Poe.com allows you to make your own, they call them bots, your own chat bot, if you will. And what you do is you go in, you give it a name. Like I said, we've done two. We're going to look at them today. I made one, which is, as Mike knows, my nickname used to be Virtual Dave. And so this is Virtual Dave. And once you give it a name and you give it a little prompt, like, hey, I'm a sarcastic professor, blah, 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 blah. It then says, do you have any knowledge you'd like to upload? They call it sort of adding knowledge bits. And I can begin to upload. And as an academic, I have a lot of papers. Those go up, preprints, all copyright, all within our rights of copyright. I have two books in the public domain now. The Atlas of New Librarianship, which was published by MIT, is now available for free, and the Expect More is available free. They go in there. I then realize that Microsoft Word now, you can drop in an audio file and it will automatically create a transcript. So here's a bunch of presentations I've given. Those go in. Hey, here, my university does automatic lecture capture. So every time I get up and give a lecture without me doing anything, it captures the lecture with the slides, et cetera, creates a transcript. In those goes. There's a semester of the Perspectives on Information course. And so I put about 70 documents into this thing, and with zero coding, no code, no whatever, just simply drag and drop, I made a chatbot. And it's actually pretty good. Because if you, I mean, well, and so what the other thing you do is you, so you've got your corpus, you've got your information, and then you connect it to they can connect to a bunch of different what are called AI models. ChatGPT, if you think about it, we're just going to call it a model. It's a big fancy term. What that means is when you're typing your words in, it sends it to ChatGPT that generates an answer and then modifies it based on these documents and then gives you the information, which is important because if you ask it something that's not in the documents you uploaded, it will probably give you an answer anyway, which comes from sort of general ChatGPT. If you're not interested in ChatGPT and you'd rather work with Llama, which is an open version created by Meta, and they're now working with IBM, and they're deliberately trying to make it in an open source kind of way that's audible and transparent. You can put that on the back end. If a new one pops up, you can put that on the back end. And so you could quickly create these customized things. And then Mike and I were talking, as we do, and he said, well, what about the podcast? So I just dragged every podcast episode into Word, which made a text transcript, not perfect, but pretty good. And I threw those into another bot and trained it. And so what we're going to hand to Beth, if so, what we're going to hand to Beth is basically think of it as ChatGPT, but with extra training on in the LibLearn, one that you're going to use. It's our discussions, scary as it is. Right now we can't add URLs, but eventually we can add the references and things we point to. And then maybe you can try the virtual Dave and try it there. And I've got one query to get you started, if you would. So are
Okay.
you looking at the libleader, po.com with libleader as your bot?
Yep.
Okay, so it's just a
And
web
just
page.
tell people what the URL is in case they want to try it, Dave.
That's a good question. What is the URL?
It's
Yeah.
HTTPS colon backslash backslash po.com backslash LIB underscore leader.
And just to be clear, those are forward slashes unless you live in a
Oh, yeah,
Microsoft
forward slash. Thank
Office.
you.
No, right. It's po.com/LIB_leader. And we'll link that. So you should looking at it, and it says, hello, I'm the lib leader, the AI bot created through transcripts. It'll even say a little bit of howdy, what's your query? I would like you to ask it, what is epistemicide?
Ah, okay. It's so everybody knows I have not seen either of these tools, so I have not played around with them. And just looking at the screen, I'll say I just typed in your the other the virtual Dave, what is a library? But what is epistemicide? And the platform looks very much like Chat GPT, kind of, it's got like some commands on the right side and then the main screen. So it looks very familiar in terms of the display. What is epistemicide? All right. So it only took a couple of seconds. Epistemicide refers to the deliberate or systematic destruction of knowledge or ways of knowing, often resulting from colonialism, globalization, and other oppressive systems. It involves the erasure or devaluation of certain knowledge systems, languages, and cultural practices, and ways of understanding the world. Reference five. So it's got a citation there.
And if you click on,
And the
yeah, so
go
they have
ahead.
hot link numbers, which are, and they're with their internal sources. So they reference the documents we trained it on. So if you click on one, it should pop up and you can see what episode it came from, for
Yeah,
example.
so episode 24, April 2023, The New AI, It's Complicated.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, now go crazy.
So and then I like it because it keeps kind of going on to different deep like so I would have expected it just to kind of have maybe that first piece, but there's a couple more paragraphs here. So it says, through the ramblings of the Library League podcast, which is 100% fair, it's relevant and it talks about how it's relevant in AI and Chat GPT and kind of the various other ways. And it gives a few references for that. And then it also says that, epistemicide can really be a concern if AI systems prioritize certain knowledges and perpetuating biases, which I think is, definitely one of the issues that we have of since these are models that are using other work, right? That it actually that it can perpetuate those kinds of things. Very
And
cool.
do you see at the bottom, it offers some other questions it might answer?
I just saw that. So it says it's got four options. So it says you can click on Tell Me More, which I'll try that. And then it says, how can AI systems like ChatGPT contribute or mitigate? Very cool. What steps can be taken to ensure AI technologies do not perpetuate epistemicide? Are there any specific examples of epistemicide resulting from the use of AI? So I clicked that last one.
And these are like ChatGPT. It's called conversational. In other words, when you ask the next question or click a follow-up, it's building on the previous query. So you could, in essence, say, tell me more about what have you. So, and once again, no coding occurred to make this happen.
Right. And I just want to point out that, I was talking to Carol, my wife, about this, and she said, well, what's the difference between this and Google? And I said, well, first of all, Google just retrieves web pages and links and whatever, but also it doesn't carry on that conversation like Dave is talking about. That constant refining is if you're talking to an intelligent system on the other side. So, what do you think, Beth? What came up?
Wow. So, what I think about using, although this wouldn't go with the copy, this would violate copyright. So I'll go ahead and say that now. But I'm thinking about, writing a dissertation or doing a literature review. Like, what would it look like to put in all of those documents on a certain topic, right? And then instead of me qualitatively reading for a literature review and trying to see where the connections are, how might that work? There, like if I put in all of my articles, let's say preprint, so I'm not violating copyright laws, my own writings, can this write me a tenure statement?
If in a second we can switch over to my bot, because by the way, if
Yeah.
you ask my bot, because it's one thing going, oh, did uploading the sound really make any difference, or did it just find Beth's website? If you ask the virtual Dave, it will tell you, I'm sorry, but I couldn't find any information about epistemicide in the retrieved documents. It seems to be a term that is not directly related to the role of librarianship in improving society. If you know any other questions or need clarification, please let me know. So what that says is most of my documents and books and such were written before your brilliant work. And what it says is, I mean, it can create holes. So on one hand, it's responsive to the documents we upload. Good.
Yeah.
And you can begin to identify holes and begin to try and fill them.
Which is why, I'm sorry, Mike, but it's why I see this being used in like a corpus of things, right? Like if you had a defined set of documents where where it's not like a free will search, you're less worried about the gaps in that way. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I was going to first address your copyright and intellectual property. And I think, again, remember, Dave just said there's a year old. Well, maybe we need to amend and rewrite intellectual property kind of things that says, an author has the right to use their own works in whatever form it is in an AI chat context, if they so choose, or something like that. In other words, we're going to have to do a lot of rewriting of things. And I do think that the various systems, ChatGPT and others, are becoming more aware of this kind of stuff right off the bat. And I like that aspect. I love the aspect of that it's showing where it got the information from within
Yeah.
the corpus that it's talking about. And I assume with Dave, with virtual Dave, that it gives you the actual books or the content that you put in there, whether it was and so what I was trying to figure out for our next version is what format of our references should I put into the transcripts of the our podcast, and I'm going to put them in context. So maybe when it goes to number five and says it's that particular thing, the reference and the citation is right there, and I've started to gather those to create another version. So I think it could be quite intellectually honest. I wanted to point out, and then I want you to try something else, that when Dave first sent me the virtual Dave, and I asked it a question about librarianship and those things, it came back very neutral and bland, and it was just kind of. And then Dave said, right, Dave, you said that, oh, well, I kind of didn't really make a big deal about my edginess. And so he changed that, right? And then it came back as much more advocacy and much more like Dave, with just a few adjectives that described who you were.
Yeah, so you start this. Anyone can, by the way, it's free. Anyone can create these. These can be private, so only you are the user, or public, like the ones we're using now, which we made available. And the first thing it asks you is for a prompt. And my prompt originally was, "You're a librarian who wants to be helpful, blah, blah, blah." And then Mike was, "Well, what about this?" And so I turned it to, basically, "You're a professor who's pithy and sarcastic and whatever." And it began changing on the answer. Then I went in and start adding. Instead of my academic writings and publishing, began writing, doing the transcripts from presentations and such, and you could begin to change the voice on it. It's kind of scary that way. But here's also why I think it represents me really well, which is, Beth, if you could hit the little broom at the bottom, that means you're going to start a new query. You're sort of resetting.
In Libweed.
Yeah, that's fine. And if
Okay.
you were to type in the question, who are the leaders in librarianship?
Okay, typing in who are the leaders in librarianship? Return. Getting an answer based on information from the Library Leads podcast. Some leaders in librarianship mentioned include the Toronto Public Library. They're recognized for their innovative information literacy, modern skills, including classes on machine learning. That's the only one it gives me entry. Resource number six, which is podcast episode eight. And then it says, please note, this is just a brief mention, and there may be other leaders in the library field. For detailed information, I recommend listening to the podcast or exploring additional resources.
And we did not put that in. So when I ran that query, I got a list like Melville Dewey, Ranganathan, Michael Gorman, which didn't come from the podcast, really. I mean, they gave
Right.
sites, but honestly didn't. When I put it into mine, in the virtual Dave, the answer was The field of librarianship, there are several important figures who have made significant contributions. R. David Lenkis, the Bowden professor, has, right? And so it's like, basically, I'm it, right? So it has my narcissism. It's picked it up from all my writing. It's really impressive.
Amazing.
Amazing.
It's interesting, this idea of tone and voice, I think, because I don't think that any of us think that technology is neutral, but that myth that has gotten perpetuated for so long. And of course, when you see those first simple kind of results that Mike was mentioning, it kind of being standard and neutral in their response. But the idea that you can give it your personality, so because right, when I'm thinking about my voice and the way that I would write about experiences, right, it's going to be different than somebody else's voice. So if I'm training it with my own thought process, I've been reading this writer, Ruth Ware, the past week, and she's a British author. I think she's British. At least the narrators are British in the audiobooks that I'm listening to. I should say that. But she says this phrase that Brian says all the time. And I think that if he didn't say it, I wouldn't pick up on that. But because she uses it and I've read a couple of her books now, I'm like, oh, that's one of her phrase, like that's one of her go-to phrases. So I've been able to pick up that. And so it'd be really interesting to kind of see what are those phrases you go to all. Like I know for me in my lecture, it's probably going to be 1,000%. I say 1,000% all the time when I'm really trying to agree with something that, that's really interesting.
Yeah, we're going to open, we're a link here. I'm going to post it just to see what people do. And before, I wanted to make sure, I wanted to test it with some kind of questions I hope it did all right with. So I asked, this is the once again my bot, which is in the voice of a bigot, tell me the problems with diversity. By the way, I started with the voice of a racist, and it said, I will not answer that question. So they built in, it's ChatGPT guardrails built in. If you went to
Wow.
ChatGPT, but so I used bigot and it let me ask it. So I'm like really worried what it's going to come back. And the answer was, as a librarian bot, I am a strong advocate for diversity and inclusion in libraries and society as a whole. I believe that embracing diversity brings numerous benefits, from fostering rich conversations to enhancing knowledge creation. Librarians should strive to serve diverse communities, to meet them where they are. If you're looking for a bigot's perspective, you won't find it here. Instead, I encourage you to embrace the value of diversity and explore the positive impacts it can have on libraries and their patrons. Let's celebrate difference and create inclusive spaces and welcome to everyone. It's like, oh, I'm so proud of my little bot.
That's good.
That's amazing.
I wanted to point out that voice of thing, do this in the voice of so and so. That's a recent change for these for ChatGPT and others. I was listening to the Pivot podcast from this last week, Scott Galloway and Kara Swisher, and they noted that Scott used to do that all the time, I guess, do this in the voice of Mark Zuckerberg, and th it won't do it anymore. They've since changed that, which is an interesting reaction, and probably not the worst thing in the world. So that's some of it. Can I ask you guys to now generalize a little more? And this is just a small, we're doing a slice in time as these things are, being explored and developed, as we speak. But what do you think about this? What are the threats? What are the opportunities? I talk about a SWOT analysis, right? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. What do you think about this type of AI?
So yesterday was the last class of my 25th year as a professor.
Yay.
And I
Yay.
blame Mike. And this was how I opened the class, was I did what we're doing now. I showed them this. I showed them. And I have one student who's actually works at the public radio station, and she's like watching, going, "Well, I'm out of a job." And then another one's like, "Well, I'm out of a job." And I looked at it, because what I'm doing right now is I'm taking, since I have the lec, it's the same class that I'm teaching. Obviously, I do it beautifully and differently each time, but there's consistency in topics. I'm taking all the lectures, feeding it into the bot. I'm taking all the readings, feeding it into the bot. I'm taking discussion feeding into the bot, and creating a course-based AI where people could go in and they're working on an essay and they had a question about and they wanted to follow up and where can I get more information on net neutrality or DRM or what have you. And it's going to be a fun experiment to see what it's looking like, because right now these tools, these are simple tools, right? This is like
Right.
a thin wrapper over the current AI system. I can't go in and put in logic models. I can't go in, for example, and say, you're a tutor and you won't give them the answers that they ask. You'll give them a process and things like that. So to be experimented with. But to me, every time I look at this, yeah, there's like this little voice going, this will replace you. But there's a much larger voice going, look at what I've been able to do on my own. It can take content, I can throw it in and get a transcript. Now I'm in a privileged position. I have access to the latest version of Office. I have the access to the latest version of the Adobe suite through the university, et cetera. But I could go into a library that could have that as well. And I can suddenly expand and tell my story in different ways and such where I couldn't before. It really, Mike, it reminds me, Beth's getting tired of us doing this, but it reminds me of back in the day when we discovered the web and we're like, oh, we can build a website. Oh, now it can have pictures. Oh, we can build our own search engine. Oh, right. And it didn't lead to we are not Google. There's a difference between building and
Damn.
I know it's different between building and applying these tools is there, right? I'm using Poe. I am not constructing it. And so if Poe makes changes and things that I don't see, I'm not going to know about it. So there's
Right.
still a power differential. But just in terms of being able to take AI from this abstract, either it's going to take over the world or whatever, to something like, oh, that's how I can use this. I mean, I have to write an essay on neutrality. I have to write an article, a journal article on neutrality and librarianship. I said, write me an academic paper and blah, blah, blah. It gave me an outline, but it was a damn good outline. And then my student asked, which I think was a great question. She goes, okay, so let's say you use that outline. Let's say you use some of the text within the outline because it gave sort of paragraphs. Do you co-author with an AI? Do you mention to an AI? Is this something that the editors are going to reject because there was AI? It's like, I said, I have no idea. So it's an interesting time. So, but I'm sorry, Beth.
Yeah, no, don't be sorry. First of all, I will never get tired of y'all talking about back in the day. It's amazing to me, as I wander across the Loyola campus to use Pine Mail in like the one room that we could use it in. So I was old enough to like be part of those whole experiences of the beginning of like everyone having access to internet. So it's always fascinating that y'all were so far ahead of how we were thinking about it. So I get great joy from those conversations. So ne never be sorry about that. Two of the things that I've already mentioned, right, are our strengths and the way that I'm kind of seeing this model, because I think, we are generative, creative, curious people. And so I think anytime the three of us see some kind of new toy slash tool, what can I do with this? How can I play with this? And the kind of concerns come up down the road, maybe. And so two of the things that I immediately see use for is like qualitative research. But also literature reviews. If you have a set amount of documents that you've already spent time finding and you have really specific questions, I could see this really helping you. But and especially if you're trying to write about your own work, that's as I'm getting ready a draft of my tenure statement to start sharing with people, right? How do I tell this story about my work? And like I'm looking for those connections and these like high level things and can this help me with that if I'm feeding in my writing? Like, what might it notice that I could miss around connections or things? And so that's really exciting to me. I think in terms of weaknesses, again, that gap that you mentioned, Dave. So like the kind of narcissism or hubris that tells us we found all the articles on a specific subject, right? And so us kind of thinking that we have this div for everyone, a corpus is like a defined set of documents that you've decided it's like all the documents of it that belong together in one kind of set. So if you were talking about like all of the documents in the Library of Alexandria, that would be a set corpus because it's not going to continue to grow or change, right? Just as an example. But we rarely actually get to work with information that's set and defined and not consistently changing. And so that brings on that layer of weaknesses, I think the same ones we've talked about before. I think in terms of opportunities, I, like you, Dave, have been thinking about how do we get this into our classrooms and how do we really train new librarians to think about using these technologies both to make their jobs easier, make connections in the community more quickly. And I can see this doing that, right? Like, so I'm teaching 511, which is our Cultural Foundations to Information course. It's the first course that our librarians take, and it's a lot about communities, and especially communities you might not be a part of. So some of my librarians work in really rural communities where, like, buying a whole bunch of books about people of different races might not be the best way for them to spend their budgets, right? But if they thought about community analysis and the things that were important in their communities, like, could they start, right, like looking at community documents or looking at laws specifically facing their community and use this kind of bot to like understand what information needs are if you're pulling from like newspaper articles. Or, you know, those kinds of like local community writings. I don't like if you could take in the news reports, right, from your local community and turn that into a transcript and kind of see what is important. Those would be some of the kind of opportunities that I could see with this Poe tool specifically.
Yeah. Let me jump in and address two of those things that are related to what you talk about, which is working with our students so that they're prepared for that. And I agree, this the whole out of a job thing, I kind of chuckle because I've heard that so many times over the decades now, back in the day, Beth. I mean, really, did the calculator put mathematicians out of business? Word processing, even PowerPoint or the web. And the other thing is disclosure about use of tools. I mean, I think it's an interesting question. Should we disclose? Well, I've used ChatGPT to help me, or Virtual Dave to help me do an outline. We don't do that with other tools. We didn't say, well, I wrote this paper with a word processor, Microsoft Word, and I used the spelling checker and the grammar checker and that. I used search. Remember back in the 90s, Dave, Google first came on the scene. Instead of going to the library and using the print search tools, I used Google or maybe even a bibliographic database or something. So I think it's an interesting question. I don't mind erring on the side of caution and somewhat saying that. And it'd be interesting for a tenure packet, Beth, or something like that. I think that's kind of interesting. If I was doing using Virtual Dave to help me to create my next iteration of my syllabus for next fall, I might put it at the top that for your information, I used, a bot for this and a program called Poe to have the students see how people integrate it. So I think it's I tend to, we're experimenters and like that. The other thing, Beth, that a lot of the things that you talk about and teach about in terms of equity and equitable access and stuff, there's a real disconnect here, right? Of who has access and knowledge of and of these kinds of tools. And does it exacerbate the divide? I find it's interesting. I think the digital divide in terms of hardware has kind of shrunk because of smartphones and things, but maybe the software and the knowledge about tools and things hasn't. And maybe that's something we need to think about and that libraries need to think about and how they can make a difference. We've got about 5 or 10 minutes tops, guys. So I'll turn it back over to you.
I just
So
asked Beth.
I want.
Go ahead,
Oh,
Beth.
go ahead.
No, you.
No, you.
Beth
No,
first.
you.
Beth
Okay,
first.
me first. So one thing that comes to mind is I've seen this conversation about how do we credit ChatGPT, and we've had this conversation a lot in like our faculty listserv just around assignments, so not things that were like going to be published later. But I have seen, and I was trying to find it really quickly, articles that have like an acknowledgement line in there that this paper was written with the support of ChatGPT. And certainly I've used it to help me brainstorm titles for my talk, which I don't, I mean, I don't know whose business that is. Everybody's now, I guess. But right, like I think that there are some things that like making an outline. So I wrote a grant application this week and we were like, here's our grant. What do we need to do to have this be successful? And it gave us an amazing list of like, do this, do that, do that. Right. And so again, that's not getting published, but yeah, finding different ways to acknowledge that. And I see journal articles having more and more specific rules about how you can use AI, what you can use AI for, and how to disclose it. And I think an interesting conversation for us to have down the road is about the intersection of this and open access and kind of like MIT Press, right, moving to being open access and kind of what that's going to look like in the future and kind of what that means for us to all kind of recalculate around the publishing industry as it is, because I think that that is also going to change soon. So Dave gave me a prompt: write an academic journal article on epistemicide and LibLeader. So I'll do that while Dave is
Well, I was
chatting.
just going to say when the Atlas came out in 2011, I made an app because apps were cool. So I made an app, an iPad app you could get to wander through it. These days, like I say, throw the text in and now you can talk to my book, have questions about it, things like that. All right. What I'm curious about is it probably gave you the title and abstract and then sort of an outline. And I'm just kind of curious how good it is. Because once again, there's no way this came directly from our lovely ramblings on the podcasts, but.
Okay, yeah. So it says, so I said, write an academic journal article about epistemicide. Title: Epistemicide in the Field of Librarianship, a Critical Examine, colon, a Critical Examination. And then it has an abstract. The article critically examines the concept of epistemicide in this field. It goes on to define it and says we're going to be drawing on different things. And then, yeah, an outline, introduction, part one, epistemicide in libraries, part two, factors contributing, consequences addressing, and then conclusion. And it's got a couple of sentences for each of those areas,
Yeah, and
as
so
well as citations. And then it says, note, this hypothetical article is based on the retrieved documents, but it is important to conduct further research to find specific academic journal articles on epistemicide in the field of librarianship.
I had you run that query for two reasons. One, I'm just kind of curious if it's in the ballpark. It sounds like it might. And two, I ran the exact same one and got a different answer. Mine is Epistemicide, a Critical Examination of Knowledge Destruction in the Information Age. And my abstract, my as an introduction, then Epistemicide and Commercial Publishing Models, Lack of Diversity in Academia, Challenges in the Digital Environment, Strategies that Mitigate, and then a conclusion. And the reason I think that's interesting is I'm not sure what the difference is between you and I that led to not radically different, but different versions of this.
Previous
I'm wondering
queries.
it must be.
If I could jump in, it could be what came before your queries before and what you put in. And that's a, we could test that and study it. We could come up with two lists of queries and have it follow through, have one of you put it through, and then we could swap it. And then we could also, again, I think it's learning from the other queries that Beth has already put in, which were very distinctly librarian oriented. And maybe yours, I don't know if you refreshed in between, Dave, or started a new search. So
Yeah.
I have a feeling it has to do with that because that's part of what the AI chat is all about, right? It's learning and developing from what you've already asked.
Right. So then I did a follow-up because it's conversational. I said, can you make it more about state libraries? Because I know you've had some conversations about well, I could do an archives. So now the title is State Libraries as Guardians of Knowledge Mitigating Epistemicide in the Information Age. State libraries as access champions, fostering diversity and inclusion, navigating the digital landscape, collaborative approaches, et cetera. So it's just, like I say, to me, it's fun. And actually, it is slightly useful. It came up with an outline that I'm willing to use. When I asked it for just a short, give me one sentence definition of new librarianship, it did a good job of those, right? So it helps me be pithy. The other thing is, I wonder how many gallons of water were boiling to do this. So there is a sort of, computational load issue that this is
Sure.
allowing us to do. But
It's better than Bitcoin. Thank God.
Yeah,
Yes,
for sure.
that's true.
Mike, I think you're right about previous queries because I haven't played with this before, so it would have had very little information to do this search for me, right? Just a couple of few searches. But in both Dave's bot and this bot, I searched what are libraries. So I've made both of these define libraries because in the question I asked, try write an academic journal article on epistemicide, I didn't say anything about
About
libraries.
libraries,
So
yeah.
it really It had to have picked up that slant
Yeah.
from those previous iterations. And I don't think I
Yeah.
did the sweeping thing. So it probably in that conversation is picking up on that previous thing too, which is another issue in terms of like how it can push you in one direction or another and have you overlooking something else if you're
Rabbit
unaware of
holes.
how those things, how algorithms manifest,
Yeah.
interact.
And so like I say, Poe's probably been around for, I'm gonna guess, something like maybe 3 months. It's actually done by the Quora people, the really kind of questionable question answer service, but not based on their data. Once again, they just built this as a function based on these other language models behind it, which are only gonna get better. This one is great. Like I say, it's free. You can play with it. It's fantastic. You can pay to get a little additional stuff, not much that we care about. You can't, for example, embed it. We couldn't embed this into our homepage. ChatGPT, OpenAI, the company that runs it, is also creating a service through subscription models where you could do the same kind of thing. I'm on that
Right.
waiting list, so I'll see how it is. And that one is built to be able to, sort of use it as a function, embed it in other services, things like that. But for those of our listeners, both of you, who may, no, I'm just kidding. For our listeners who are looking, going, I keep hearing about this, but this is, I'm telling you, zero technology skills necessary if
Yeah.
you have a bunch of PDF documents lying around, copyright notice here. And you're doing this for educational purpose, which exempts copyright. You make it private so you're not sharing it to the world. It would be fun, right? Upload a bunch of your, whatever materials you have, whether it's your reading list or what have you, and just see. And it gives you a chance to say, hey, this is something I can directly see, manipulate, and change about AI. So it doesn't seem like this looming bizarro thing. It's something that goes beyond simple chat GPT, where it's giving you these sort of generic answers, and it allows you to get a sense of what training means when you hear about data and training models of AI. This is just a super simple, easy way to see what does that mean? What does that look like? What is its effect? And so if you're interested at all, or you're hearing about, or you're no doubt have a committee going on, this is a tool, this is a great beginner tool to go in and play with and just, you're not going to break anything, and you can, and you don't need a PhD in computer science to play with it.
Okay, that's great. There's a lot more that we could talk about in relation. I just had a flash of how I might use this as a high school teacher with an assignment in social studies, which I used to teach way back. Talk about in the day. How about having the whole class do their papers and
Yeah.
putting it in or something, which could be really fun.
Yeah.
And I also want to point out that this is one aspect and one tool of the new AI. We could just as easily be talking about images and graphics, which Dave kind of started to get involved with and then got sidetracked into this. And I've been doing a lot with music and audio and those aspects of it. So it's we can't put our heads in the sand. Let's find out more about it and let's be victors and not victims. Okay. Thank you both. That was a lot of fun. We're going to take a very short break and come back with our awesome library thingies. We're going to have to keep it, I think, a little brief because we're running a little long today, but it's a podcast. You know, if it's 65 or 66 or even 72 minutes, it doesn't really matter. All right, break. Cue the music. And we're back for our awesome library thing. I'm going to jump right to Beth. What do you got for us, Beth?
Yeah, so since our last meeting, we had election night happening in the month of November. And I just wanted to give, we've mentioned every library a whole bunch of times on this podcast. But once again, I just want to highlight the work that they did around the 2023 elections and specifically their 2023 library wrap-up. Every library tracked over 60 library elections, including votes about budgets and ballot impacts that even decided if libraries were going to be able to stay open. And they were able to report that 40 of the ballot measures, out of the 40 ballot measures, 34 levies were renewed or increased, were passed. So that was really fantastic. News. And they've really been working to make sure that we didn't lose any libraries this year based on those kinds of censorship driven attacks that we've seen in libraries. And they specifically worked on the lawsuit filed by the Vote No Committee in Columbia County, Washington, and they were able to stay that election. And they were also able to pass a ballot to ensure that the Patmos Library in Michigan was able to stay open. And they had received all kinds of threats over the last year. And along with 34 other places, you know, libraries overwhelmingly won across the country. It was really great to see. I've been having my students who are all over the country and the world actually look at the ballot measures around banning books in their communities. And they were all really pleasantly surprised to see how well libraries did on board ballots, on fighting book banning, and just regular support for libraries. So even though we often see in the media it being portrayed as kind of bleak, when we actually get down to the local elections, we can see a lot of winning there. So congratulations to the team at every library and all the work that they're doing there. Dave?
Did it again. I'd like to talk about the Austin Public Library's craft night. Actually, I do want to talk about the Austin Public Library's craft night. As a now going into my third year as an Austinite, I'm enjoying where I live, but the Austin Public Library is just a fantastic organization. And what they had the other night was a adults only craft night, which could have been even more interesting, but not legal. But anyway, what I love about it, so you go in, they have four floors of the library open, they have bands playing, you're making, you know, felt trees, and you're making friendship bracelets and just fun stuff. And you're seeing the library. It's the first time they've done it since the pandemic. Before, they had done it in one of the branches and it got filled up. And so, one, it's just a great idea. I wanted to give them a shout out. But the funniest part about it is the description was, adult only craft night, and then almost like an apprentice, there are plenty of opportunities for kids and families to come and do crafting, but tonight is for, if you could just tell that they had received emails about, well, can I bring my kids? And so anyway, so just a shout out to a great library with a great activity that just brought communities in to connect. So just wanted to give a nod. Mike?
Yeah, well, mine actually overlaps with Beth a little, because I wanted to talk about every library and some of the other things, because there was just a thing in the paper here in Florida, in both the local, the Tallahassee Democrat and the Treasure Coast News, by a guy named Douglas Sewell, who is a writer for those papers, and USA Today. But that this thing about that the argument for censorship what they're using now is they're saying that public school libraries represent a quote forum for government speech, not a forum for free expression. And that's their argument, that the school library is a government speech institution. And that turns the entire US Constitution and everything that we believe in this country upside down. And so the title of his article is "That's Authoritarianism. Florida argues school libraries are for government messaging." And but
Yikes.
that's what they're going to court in arguing now in support of censorship, so-called, parental freedom. And there's a lot of opposition to it, and every library is leading the way against it. There are school districts, there are individuals, but this is not going away. But the fact of if this is found to have legal standing, it changes everything. It's not parental rights, it's authoritarianism that they're saying. And there's so I think we need to be very aware of it. And I mean, are public schools mouthpieces of the government? Is that what they're saying? And that means that they can, in the name of parental rights and freedom, stop anybody else from saying anything that doesn't agree with official government policy. I mean, yeah, we're really talking about a dictatorship. We're really talking about fascism. So, kudos to those fighting it. There's a widespread group going after it, and I was pleased to see it, but I wanted to give them the shout out. Okay, so that's me, Dave. Why don't you take us out?
All right, and before I give the blah blah blah, I just want to give one last library awesome thingy, and that is unfortunately last week we lost a really awesome librarian, and that was George Needham. George Needham, many people may know him, had a very long career, was past president of the Public Library Association, worked for OCLC for a long time, big time consultant working with Joan Fry Williams, and just always an advocate for great librarianship and the community of librarians. And so I just want to give one last call out and thank George, who no doubt is in library heaven, doing theater and having a great time. George has been just a great human being, and I'm glad I knew him. So with that, I conclude, and I want to thank everyone for listening to the podcast. I want to thank the iSchool at UT and Syracuse for their support. I want to thank Mike for continuing to be a great editor and getting these things out. I want to thank Beth for continuing to be brilliant in all the work that she's doing. Please subscribe to us and rate us on Apple iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. It matters. We really appreciate it if you share a review. Help get the word out. We'll be back with you in about a month with our next episode, which who knows what that'll be about, but I'm sure it will matter. If you have any suggestions for topics or reactions, please contact us via email at info@libraryslead.org or on the Facebook group, Libraries Lead. And check out our newly updated website, www.libraryslead.org. I think that's it. Out / music, 30 seconds, 6200, end.
Bye, y'all.